listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
I sat by the ocean. What's the name of the band, Michael?
Queens of the Stone Age.
Queens of the Stone Age. I like it. Nice vibe to it. Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A quick word for the Daspit Law Firm, working for you 24-7. Houston personal injury attorney John Daspit handles personal injury cases from plant and refinery accidents, medical injury, industrial accidents, 18-wheelers, boat and car. I would imagine he's very busy with this horrific flooding here. DaspitLaw.com, 713-364-0915, DaspitLaw.com. With the Daspit Law Firm, rest more assured in times of stress. You have a hard-hitting personal injury attorney on your side to fight for your right for compensation. It's Daspit Law Firm, 713-364-0915, 888-273-1045 in both English and Spanish. And we thank the Daspit Law Firm, all our sponsors, Liberty Kitchen, 7-Up, Bud Light, Bar Munich, Daspit Law Firm, the great Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture with my great personal friend Jan Christensen, the gorgeous Gale. We thank you for your support of soccer on the radio. You can follow me at Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Also, a reminder to get over to our Facebook page. We've got a number of different postings over there with Carlo Ancelotti, Didier Drogba, to Major League Soccer, some videos. There'll be more videos being put up there from behind the scenes here on commercial break. All right, right now, a little bonus coverage. Interview with the one and only Giles Barnes of the Houston Dynamo. He'll be in action for the Dynamo against Manchester City this Thursday night. Giles, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Anytime, Glenn. How are you?
Doing good. Let's start with the LA match and just get your overall thoughts on that road game.
To be honest with you, I didn't think it was a very pleasing game to watch on the eye. You know, we've watched it over a few times. It was obviously disappointing coming away with the loss. We thought we'd done enough to at least get a draw. So it's always a good sign. You know, you can go to the current champions and perform the kind of way we did, you know, especially in the second half. We took a lot of good things, a lot of positives out of the second half. If we'd have carried on that through in the first half and brought it through, we feel that we would have had all the 3 points and been sitting a little bit prettier in the table. But again, it's unfortunate what happened in the last minute, but you learn from that and you can come to the next game.
Positive things in the second half. Let my listeners know what those were.
The positive, we were getting forward. We knocked the ball around a bit more. We had chances in front of goal. I thought we looked a completely different team compared to like the mid first half team, if I'm honest. But I think the boys felt that too. It was kind of a better feeling in the second half than we had in the first half.
You yourself, you know, I mean, there's five or six times in this game you break out and you're running at defenses and they're fouling you and you're making things happen. Were there times you think you guys could have got another player or two into the penalty area in support of some of those movements forward? Because I thought you guys broke out pretty good on a number of occasions in this game.
Yeah, you know, we're playing pretty good counter-attacking football, to be honest with you. And hopefully it's pleasing to the eye. It's very good to play in. Sometimes, you know, with counter-attacks, it is one person breaking forward, you know. Because that's what it is, you know, it's counter-attack. So it's as the ball drops and then someone takes off and you just got to try and get those numbers into the box and try and help that support. But, you know, the person who's breaking with the ball really has the license to go and try something and do whatever they want, really. And if it can make something happen, then they can make something happen.
You yourself, do you think now that in some ways, because of this explosive nature of your game, that you're getting targeted a little bit in these games?
I do, for sure. I think the treatment of me this year compared to last year has been a lot different. I've kind of noticed a few more kicks, bumps and bruises, off the ball kind of stuff as well. I get brought down pretty frequently, but you know, I suppose it's a compliment when you're doing something right. People want to stop you, so it's a good and a bad thing.
He's Giles Barnes joining us here tonight. Let's talk about the progress this team's made to the point we are now. And obviously, there's been a lot of progress if people are looking deep into this team. In your mind, what's some of the things that you've seen subtly move forward here under the manager, Owen Coyle?
The resoluteness in the defense. We're playing a fun style of football, you know. We're soaking up pressure and then exploding on teams. And it's scored quite a lot of goals, which was something people thought we struggled with last year. We're enjoying the football. Owen's encouraging us to keep possession of the ball, get down the wing, get crosses in. But I think you can tell game to game and, you know, training sessions, whoever comes out and watches, you can see how happy the team is together and every single day that we're progressing. So we see every day as a progression, and that's the really beautiful thing about it.
Is it fair to you guys to say that you guys play differently at home at BBVA Compass Stadium as opposed to the road?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Maybe a little bit because, you know, you get a year away from home. But I think you could definitely tell last year and previous years our difference in form at home and away. I think this year we've kind of bridged the gap and we're actually going on the road, you know, and beating teams away. And that's a big thing. You know, you go back to the Toronto game away and how well we played there. You know, a few years ago, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So we're definitely bridging the gap between home and away. And when it all comes together, it's going to be something special.
He's Giles Barnes joining us here. Thursday, Manchester City comes to town. You've had matches against Manchester City in your career, and maybe you can shed some light on to the importance of this club on the global stage and also the history, a team that was formed, I believe, in 1880. Coming to Houston, this is a big moment to tie the Premier League, Major League Soccer, and the Houston Dynamo together.
Yeah, you know, it's a huge thing because people are always curious of how the MLS teams do against the Premier League teams. You know, they're coming just off the back of their season, so they're all fit, they're all fresh. You know, obviously they didn't win the title this year, but they was the reigning champions previously. So it's going to be a great spectacle. They've got some of the best players in world football coming to the stadium. You know, we've got people in our team aspiring to be the best players in world football. So it's a good to test yourself, and it's going to be great for the fans too.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, I know you had some experiences playing against them in the past. You played against Yaya Toure and some of these big stars, in particular Yaya. Give me a little bit of a sense of what it's like to play on the field against such a dominant midfielder.
He's such a good footballer. He has everything. He can pass his left foot, pass his right foot, inside out. It's hard to stop him. He's so explosive. He's so strong. He can dribble past you. He can pass. He can shoot from anywhere. You know, if you look at his goals over the last few seasons as well, he can score from anywhere. And, you know, when he's on his game, for me, he's definitely top three central midfielders in the world. So, you know, hopefully everyone gets to see that Yaya Toure on Thursday.
Now, when you played against Toure, you were playing for West Bromwich Albion. This was back in 2010. If you look at him now with Manchester City, as opposed to 2010, what more do you see in Yaya's game? Because you're... this is 5 years of maybe maturing a fine wine.
Yeah. Back then, even then, you could tell how great he was. You know, he'd just come up from Barcelona. You don't play for those kind of teams if you're not a good player. And, you know, he was dominating on that day as well. And every single year, he's added goals to his game as well. I think he was kind of more known for a defensive midfield role. But, you know, he came up to the Premier League. He started showing everybody that had more strings to his bow. And, you know, was making those killer plays where he's dribbling past people and putting it into the top corner. And that's part of his maturity, I feel, that he was able to express himself a bit more over the last few years.
Now, you yourself, when you look at this game Thursday, it obviously doesn't fall in the best of times, let's face it, for the Houston Dynamo, because you got a huge game at New York City FC this weekend. David Villa and company, you're going to Yankee Stadium, you're going to the Bronx. It's a very different field up there. It's a team that you guys can get points off, and you need points. Is it hard not to look beyond, believe it or not, Manchester City on Thursday towards New York City FC on Saturday?
To be honest with you, I think our main focus is the weekend. We know our bread is buttered, and that's in the league. It's obviously going to be a great occasion to come out and play against a team like Manchester City, but at the end of the day, we need to be picking up points for our end goal at the end of the season. It's not to be playing Manchester City, it's to be playing in that MLS Cup final, you know, challenging for that trophy. So the mill points we can pick up and our focus there towards them, then we're all going to be good.
Giles, any thoughts on the overall finish to the Premier League and teams that got relegated, teams that got promoted? Anything that really jumps out to you this year?
Bournemouth promoted. You know, Eddie Howe, a young manager, plays really attractive football. He's shown everyone that he can get out of the championship by playing expansive, flowing passing football. So that's a good thing. My friend actually played for Leicester City, so it's good to see that they survived. Wes Morgan and my other friend Danny Simpson. So it was good to see they survived. They made a bit late run towards the end of the season and they managed to stay up. So it was good. It was good all around, you know. Arsenal obviously had a good position too. So yeah, I was pretty happy with everything and how it ended.
Giles, look, you're an ambitious young soccer player with tremendous talent. I don't think there's any question about it. And this isn't meant to be taken in the wrong way. But is there ambition for you one day to go back to England and play or play in a different league? And this is nothing against the Houston Dynamo and Major League Soccer, but, you know, players move. What are the other challenges one day that could be on your plate way down the road?
You never know what can happen in football, you know. It's day-to-day. But at the moment, I'm just loving playing for Houston Dynamo. I'm enjoying every minute of it. As I said, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life was to come here. And I started enjoying my football again. And, you know, the atmosphere, the people all around the stadium, you know, coaches, staff, fans, it's all been a blessing for me. So I'm just going to continue to enjoy myself right now.
Are there things about Major League Soccer and the setup over here that you prefer to England, maybe? You know, some of these other tertiary things that are very important in the life of a footballer. Are there different things here in the U.S. that, based on the way MLS is run and teams are run, that you like and might prefer over the way it was done in England?
No, they're different. They're different either way, you know. There's pros and cons in both ways. But as I said, Glenn, I'm loving that MLS right now, and that's the way I'm going to keep on enjoying it.
How much confidence have you gained also and excitement around your career, getting picked for Jamaica and likely being a part of some of their upcoming tournaments?
Yeah, you know, being selected for Copa America and Gold Cup, it's a dream come true to play international football, you know. And obviously, I've got a lot of proud family, you know, and at the end of the day, I always want to make my family happy, you know. That's part of why I do football, you know, seeing them and making them proud. There's no better feeling than seeing your mom smiling from you being proud, you know. So it's incredible, and it's given me such a lift, you know, that little bit of confidence, especially going there and, you know, playing and scoring and starting. It just kind of, after missing preseason, it kind of kick-started a little bit of stuff, things for me as well, you know, with feeling a little bit fitter, a little bit fresher. And I think it's come out in my gameplay for Houston too.
You know, going back to the fact that teams are targeting you and targeting you physically, does that make you think a little bit differently about your game and in ways that you can be a little bit more protective of yourself physically and potentially avoid some of these situations? I know you can't avoid them all, but does it make you look at your game a little bit differently from a wear and tear perspective?
Not really, you know. It's all good to try and mix your game up a little bit to keep people on their toes, but, you know, a big part of my game is running with the ball and running at defenses, trying to make things happen, whether it's shots or through balls, you know. So I'm never gonna stop doing that, because that's such a big part, and that's part of the reason why I love playing football, because I get to express myself, you know. And like I said earlier, it's a bit of a compliment when people are kind of kicking you down at every opportunity. You know, I'm not a small guy. I'm 6'2", you know, so I can take the rough and the tumble.
Giles, listen, thank you as always for coming on. Nice, insightful interview. We appreciate it. I know my listeners appreciate it. And we wish you the best of luck against New York City FC. And also, Dynamo fans, don't forget, see Giles in action against Manchester City this Thursday night. Get over to HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Opportunity to connect with the Premier League on Thursday night. Giles, thank you so much as always.
Anytime, Glenn. Catch you later, man.
All right, he's Giles Barnes. We'll take a break here. It's a 7-Up break.
ESPN 97.5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. Before we get to the head coach of the Houston Dash, Randy Waldron, let's quickly, a word here for Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you that the best place to get information surrounding the Houston Dynamo and Houston Dash is over at HoustonDynamo.com. Bud Light is longtime supporters of the game of soccer in the United States. They are sponsors of both radio shows that I do, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM, Dynamo All Access, and, of course, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. So our thanks to Bud Light, the official sponsor of the Mexican national team and Major League Soccer. And with that, we bring in the manager of the Houston Dash, coming off a spectacular 1-0 win in Portland, Randy Waldron. Randy, thank you for coming on.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me.
Well, let's get your overall thoughts on a win in what is, without a doubt, the most difficult environment to play in the NWSL. You guys waltz into Portland, and you send about 10,000 fans home unhappy with a 1-0 Houston Dash victory.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a huge win for us. Obviously, we played them three times very close last year and lost all three 1-0. So, you know, it was one of those teams that we haven't beaten yet in the league. And obviously Portland does such a great job. As you mentioned, they had over 14,000 fans there. They're amazing. I'm living for the day that we do that here in Houston. And I know we'll get there and I can't wait. We've got great fans, but, boy, I tell you what an environment, but our kids played awfully well.
Yeah, speak about, you know, how do you prepare a team for a different environment like that? 14,000 people, you know, you go from a couple thousand to 14. It's a whole different dynamic, sound, audio, pressure. How do you prepare your team for that?
You know what, I tell you, it's. I don't know that you really can. You know, you can't simulate the crowd noise. You know, we're not like the NFL where we can pipe in music out at practice, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, I got goosebumps just with the national anthem, the way that their supporter groups are so fanatical about, you know, everything there in Portland. And it's just a special place. But I think, you know, for us going in, I know that we had to be a little bit more defensive minded going into Portland because it's such a tough place to play. And, you know, and I thought it was probably one of our better games defensively. You know, we would have liked to have had more on the attack, but going into a place like that, I think it's almost like Chelsea did a few years ago with Barcelona in the two legs of the Champions League, or you know, a lot of the ways that they played this year away from home. I think it's something that we knew we had to do, and I thought the players carried out the game plan very well.
You took the lead in the 24th minute, and once again that explosive acceleration over a couple of yards that Kalia Ojai possesses was a big piece of this goal. She finds Jessica McDonald. Ironically, McDonald was the leading goal scorer last year for the Portland Thorns. This happens so much in sports. But talk about the goal and how it was carved out and the importance of it in the 24th minute.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the occasions we had a pretty nice build-up in the play, you know, starting in our back line and got the ball over to Kalia, and as she's so good at doing, you know, if she turns and gets faced up on you, she's a handful. And as you mentioned, she got a couple yards separation on their outside back and got down actually on her weak side, which is her left foot, and served a great cross, you know, across to Jess, who's really, really efficient if you can get balls played into her in and around that six-yard box or that second six-yard box. And she was deadly on the finish. It was a great header and beat the goalkeeper near post. So it was a really, really nice action for us and, you know, something that you do work on in the training field. And it was nice to see us pull it off. And, yeah, I wish that we would, like I said, I wish we could have created a few more of those kind of chances. But I think it's, you know, we were opportunistic, I think, there in Portland. And that's what you have to be. You know, you have to weather the storm because, you know, they're coming at you in waves. And you know, they're very talented, and with that crowd behind them, I thought our kids, like I said, I thought they played really well in terms of defensively, and you know, most of the things that got created against us, it was some turnovers on our end. It wasn't something that they really built up. So overall, great win for us. We needed it desperately.
Let's talk about your goalkeeper, Randy Bianca Henninger. Obviously, she's up, lives up to the moment. She makes a couple of key saves. I remember the one she made on Sarah Jackson in the 23rd minute, you know, prior to you guys getting the game's first goal.
Yeah. She made eight saves, I think she was credited for, and all of them, or most of them, were actually pretty good saves because they came from really dangerous areas. But that one on Jackson, you know, got slid across, and, you know, B made a great save there on that one, and then that turns right around and turns into a great countering opportunity for us, and the goal we get, you know, probably a minute later. So she clearly was a player of the game. I mean, we had a lot of really good performances from a lot of individuals, but, you know, she clearly was the player that kept us in the game. And, you know, Bianca is a starter for anybody else. You know, she just happens to be playing behind Aaron McLeod, who's one of the best goalkeepers in the world at this time. So we're really, really pleased with our goalkeeping situation, and we don't skip a beat when we have Bianca in there, and I think she showed that.
By the way, Aaron McLeod will be representing Canada in the World Cup up in Canada, which begins only 12 days from now. 14,409 people at Providence Park in Portland, Oregon. The Dash get a 1-0 win. Next up, they will take on Sky Blue this Sunday. More good news for you. Brittany Bach goes a full 90 minutes.
Yeah, she went 90. You know, we didn't go into it with the first week, last week, we went into it looking at giving her a half. This week, we were kind of open just to see how she was feeling. And you know what? She went the full 90, and credit to her. She was exhausted when things were over. But I tell you, what a difference she makes when we have her in. You know, she's just such an anchor in midfield for us and such a physical presence. We couldn't have done that without her going 90. So we're a little thin in midfield if we don't have her. So it's great news to see her back, and especially just for her personally. You know, a year of hard work trying to come back off that ACL injury, and a lot of people may not realize, but she went in and had a little second minor surgery to clean it up along the way, and that set her back a little bit. So it's good to see these athletes come in and really do good things once they've been in rehab for such a long period of time.
Boy, and this is a player that's had a litany of injuries. I mean, just talk about her spirit, her personality, and what she brings for you as a manager.
Well, I get to see those days that she really struggles. You know, I get to see those days that she's down because she's doing rehabbing and everybody else is out training, and I see those days she's frustrated. But in general, Glenn, she's a really positive person. She's such a leader for us as well. She and Ella are probably our two team leaders. She's so good with the young players. She's what I consider just that consummate pro. You know, she's been around the leagues, all three of the leagues, and so she knows what it takes. And she's human. She has those moments where, you know, she needs a hug and she needs a pat on the back and she needs encouragement. But I tell you what, she puts more work into it than anybody we have. And I think that's why she's back now. And hopefully we can keep her healthy and just keep building on that. But she's one that we really, really need, you know, at this time period when our other leaders are off, you know, off at the World Cup. So it's just great having her back.
Speaking of the World Cup, with your international background, Randy, the FIFA Women's World Cup begins in Canada Saturday, June 6th. Canada will open it up against China, then New Zealand, and the Netherlands. Randy Waldron was the manager for Trinidad and Tobago, and I mean, by the skin of their teeth, don't qualify and ultimately get to the World Cup in Canada. But the general nature of this becoming a bigger tournament now, how do you see this sort of playing out with some of these newbies coming in internationally? And give us a couple of your thoughts on what you think happens this summer in Canada.
Well, you know, I think, Glenn, I love to see that the tournament's expanded because it shows the game's growing. I'm not real positive that some of the new teams coming in are quite ready for it. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how Thailand does. I think they're probably the weakest of the teams that's in there. And so we could see some lopsided scores from some of these new teams, although I do think the Dutch, for the first time into the tournament, are going to do well. Ecuador, surprisingly, you know, we played them twice at home and away, and they're very good, very organized defensively. I'm not sure they've got enough firepower to really do much damage in the tournament. But it's good to see those teams get in because we want to see the women's game grow. And so I think we could see a little bit of a few of those first-round games be a little bit lopsided. But having said it, I don't think it's going to be so drastic that, you know, that we're going to look back and say we made a mistake by expanding the tournament. You know, I think that's good for the game. You know, but I think still the favorites are going to be, you know, what we all know. I think you still have that group of, you know, France and Japan and obviously the U.S. Canada, since they're hosting, I think has got to be a favorite. You know, Germany, I would have picked as the favorite, but they've got a few key injuries. You know, they one of the key players is out with a pregnancy, and the other one, Nadine Kessler, I believe, is out with an injury. So, you know, they've got a few key players that they're missing. So it'll be interesting to see how they compensate for that. But those are the teams. Sweden, I think, is fully capable of winning it as well, and maybe even a Norway's got an outside shot. So I think you've got a group of five or six up at the top. It's clearly going to be better. And then I think you've kind of got that middle tier, you know, the Mexicos, the, you know, the Colombias, the Spain. I think Spain is, you know, with Vero, anytime you have Vero on your team, they've got a great player named Jenny Hermoso as well with Spain. So Spain could be one of those up-and-coming teams that could could cause some problems for some teams. You know, Colombia could cause some problems. England is right on that fringe of being a top-tier team. So it's going to be an interesting World Cup, I think.
For you, Randy, when you look at some of these countries, I find it fascinating that they sort of mirror the men's game as well. You know, you're talking about France. I remember France a while back and just going, wow, technically, I mean, these girls, you know, if a bit of strength and power is added to this overall team, they're going to be something to watch. And it's obvious they've picked up some of those things.
Well, you know, we beat them in the last game. But if you'll remember the first game, they completely dominated us, you know, a few months ago. And clearly we're the better team. So France is exactly what you're saying. They put a big emphasis on the technical aspect and the tactical organization. And you know, I hate to say it, Glenn, but I know we always talk about as the U.S. being the women's power, you know, with our team. And we keep talking about teams are catching us and teams are catching us. But if we're going to be honest with ourselves, a lot of countries have already caught us. And I think in some regards, in some phases of their games, they've probably passed, to be fair. So I think Germany, I think France, I think, you know, Sweden to an extent. I think those teams, you know, you can make an argument that they may be ahead of us in some of the aspects of the game. And clearly Germany, you know, is the defending champion, not the defending champion from 11, Japan is, but from the World Cup prior to that. And Japan is very, very good technically, and their organization's great, and their youth teams are very, very good. So I think as a country, we got to be really concerned, you know, that we don't get past and we don't fall too far behind with the rest of our youth teams, our U23s and our U20s and our, you know, our U17s. Those are going to be real important age groups for us in this next, you know, 6 or 8 years cycle that we go through.
Well, with your experience, when you look at it, where is the area that we as a soccer nation need to be focused on with the women's game? Is it the tactical side of it? Technically, are we on par with everybody else? Where would you point?
I think we're falling behind technically, Glenn, is a first big piece, because I think if you look at our youth module that we have here, you know, unfortunately, it's grown and that's great news, and it's such a good model, and we have such good youth teams. But there's so much emphasis put on the winning part, you know, and I think if you go around the clubs, the top clubs around the country, you know, those coaches fear if they don't win, they lose their players or they get fired from their jobs. And so I think they spend more time worrying about getting results as opposed to truly developing the players technically the way they need to be developed. And I think that's a big problem with the way we're structured in this country. And so I think if you go look at the Japanese players, you know, we had one of their youth national teams in just a few months ago that played some of our local teams, and they were U15s, and in some cases they were 13-year-olds, and they were playing against our 17-year-old local teams here. And I tell you, just technically they were so much better, you know, than our kids. And I think you see the same thing with the French, and you're seeing it obviously in Brazil. And so I'm real worried about that aspect, and I don't know how we change it because we're such a big country right now. We're so deep into it. And then I think a little bit tactically, my experience with the international game is that tactically they have a better understanding. You know, our mentality is let's go, go, go. You know, we're such a push forward and a competitive country. You know, we want to win. Whereas I think the other countries understand the tactics of, you know, we're okay to sit in for a little while, you know, and play off the counter. And so I think we got to further our education tactically as well. But, you know, I think we're in a really crisis area, you know, and I think there's some growth to be done if we're going to stay on top.
Great insight, Randy, and we appreciate you weighing in on the Dash. Best of luck against Sky Blue this coming weekend. Thank you for all the international sort of preview here before the Women's World Cup, and we'll do it again real soon.
All right, Glenn. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Congratulations on the great win in Portland.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Randy Waldrum, the head coach of the Houston Dash. Some good insight there on the international game. FIFA Women's World Cup, it's right around the corner. Canada will open it up against China. We'll take a break here. More to come. It's a 7-Up break.
ESPN 97.5. listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Tonight, joining us, a man that's had a remarkable career for the United States, has played in four World Cups, but not only that, his club career equally as impressive, has played in a number of different leagues around the world. He's a Dynamo left back. He's DeMarcus Beasley. DeMarcus, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, listen, I want to focus a little bit on your time at Manchester City because of the Dynamo Charities Cup game on Thursday, obviously. You went from PSV Eindhoven after winning a title in the Netherlands on loan to Man City. Tell me how that all came down for you.
Yeah, you know, I felt that that I knew that Hiddink was going to leave. A new coach was going to be brought in. And, you know, he sat me down and told me, you know, I wasn't going to be a part of his plans for the next season. I wasn't going to be a starter as usual. And, you know, I wanted to play football. I was only 24, maybe 5, something like that. And I wanted to play. So I got a, you know, I got a call from, you know, from the Boston, from Man City. And they, you know, they wanted to have me. And that's kind of how it all went down. It happened pretty quick.
At that stage of your career, I mean, that that must have been something amazing for you. I mean, all of a sudden now Manchester City's after you.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. I mean, it was, you know, even back then, you know, before all the money, you know, they were still a good club, a lot of history. You know, the stadium was always almost sold out, you know, every game, you know, big stadium, you know, great great fan base, you know. So, I mean, it was a no-brainer for me, and especially, obviously, one of my dreams always to play in a premiership, and, you know, to be able to do that with Man City was great.
He's DeMarcus Beasley, the Houston Dynamo, played at Manchester City, amongst other big clubs in the world. When you were in the city of Manchester, and obviously the rivalry with Manchester United, tell me a little bit about that edge that was probably there on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, it was. You know, I mean, obviously Man City, you know, back then wasn't, you know, as known, like I guess you could say, as it is now, you know, with all the stars and all the money that's been brought into the club. But, yeah, I mean, anytime there's a, you know, rivalry, you know, a derby day, you know, you always get that sense of, you know, that sense of, you know, heightened excitement around that, around those two teams. And, you know, being around Manchester, you know, leading up to the derby, home and away was great. It was a great feeling. It was fun, you know, to play in both. And, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, those two teams have a lot of history, you know, playing against each other, and obviously being only 20 miles apart, you know, it makes for even a better match.
Now, you went to the Premier League. You went to Manchester City at the time from the Dutch Eredivisie, which obviously stylistically and purpose of play, it's very, very different. What was the biggest adjustment coming from the Netherlands to play in England?
Yeah, the same, you know, obviously the pace of the game, you know, the power of the game, you know, that aspect of, you know, the physical part of the game was a little bit different. You know, football, I mean, in Holland, you know, we play a lot of football. You know, we're, you know, the best team. You know, it was more so, our emphasis was more on the ball. I mean, we would train, you know, 45 minutes before we even started, you know, the real training with the ball. You know, whether, you know, technical, a lot of technical stuff in Holland. In England, it wasn't so much like that, you know. You know, it was more like, you know, running gun, your fitness, you know, strength, you know, weight and stuff like that. So, I mean, that part of it was different. It took some time, you know, getting used to it. But I felt that, you know, when I did get over my injury, because I came injured, but when I did get over my injury, I was able to, you know, start. I was able to, you know, find my way into leadership, and I thought I, you know, had a, you know, a pretty decent season.
Yeah, talk about coming to a new team where there's a lot of expectations. You got to get to meet new teammates, but you're carrying an injury, and it takes a little bit of a while to get going. Was that difficult?
Yeah, it was difficult. You know, because I mean, I came, you know, obviously, you know, my first year at Holland, you know, Champions League semifinals, you know, didn't play against Champions League my second season. So obviously, you know, they looked at me as a player that could, you know, obviously help them right away. But you know, it was the same that I couldn't. So you know, obviously, you know, not being fit, it's going to take me a little bit longer to, you know, to be game fit, you know, to be ready to play. So, but, you know, they gave me time, you know, the coach at the time, Stuart Pearce, you know, he was very, you know, confident in me and how I play as a footballer. So, you know, he gave me my time, and basically around, you know, the end of November is when I started. And then after that, you know, he kept me on the field. He kept me, you know, in the lineup, and, you know, I let my play speak for itself.
Now, you made 22 appearances at Manchester City, scoring 3 goals. Once you got into the starting lineup, you had a very definable 83rd-minute game winner against West Ham United. Talk about scoring the game winner against against West Ham United for Manchester City in the Premier League, your first goal there.
Yeah, that was my first goal. It was amazing feeling. You know, I mean, I've been wanting to, you know, get on the score sheet. You know, I was just coming back, you know, from my injury, and you know, I was in and out of the team at that stage. But you know, that really got me going, and that gave myself confidence, and it gave, you know, obviously my teammates and my coaches confidence in myself. So, you know, from there, you know, it kicked on. You know, I think I ended up scoring 5 goals, you know, that year, by the way.
Okay, and, I needed to be corrected.
It was a great, great time, and you know, score in the Premiership against, you know, against West Ham in London was unbelievable feeling. You know, a goal I'll never forget.
So, tell me about one of the other goals out of the 5 that was memorable to you.
Obviously, the one against Arsenal. You know, I mean, that's in the Emirates Stadium. That was probably my. It wasn't as nice as the West Ham goal, but just, you know, playing in Emirates against Arsenal. You know, I played a couple times against in the Champions League with PSG, but in the Premiership, you know, in that kind of game in their stadium, the new stadium, you know, and you know, scoring that goal with, you know, Joey Barton, you know, passing the ball and sliding in the side corner. It was a great feeling. We tied it 1-1, but we ended up losing 3-1. But you know, just from a personal standpoint, you know, it was great to score against a great team as Arsenal.
Now at Manchester City, your manager was Stuart Pearce, who has the nickname Psycho. What was he like as a manager?
Oh no, he wasn't psycho. I mean, I heard different things when I first came to the club that, you know, as a player he was crazy. He was, you know, one of the, you know, fierce competitors and this and that. And you know, I'm sure that his coaching ability is probably the same. But it was total opposite. He was quiet. You know, he didn't really, you know, yell and, you know, scream like if we lost that. He wasn't a kicker of the, you know, like, you know, coaches come to the locker room and they you know, they kick cans and they kick stuff around the locker room being upset. He wasn't like that at all. He was very calm, very collected. You know, he was very smart. He was one of the smartest coaches I've had pleasure of being with. He was all around a good guy, a good coach. He was a player coach, which I liked. You know, he talked to me and, you know, told me why I wasn't in the team, why I wasn't, or why I was. So, you know, he was, you know, very helpful in my, you know, development, you know, in that last part of the season.
DeMarcus, speak about that, because you just said something really interesting. You had a manager that was telling you why and really having an open line of conversation, man management with a player. And then, of course, in Europe and places like that, I'm sure you've had managers that, you know, are not as good or aren't stylistically that kind of a manager, and they're a little bit to themselves and they don't really give a lot of feedback to players. Talk about the differences in those two types of managers that you can have.
Yeah, I mean, you get managers like that. You know, you get managers that, you know, kind of standoffish. They don't, you know, talk to the players about, you know, different things. You know, obviously, you know, I'm just talking about on the field. You know, but you know, as players, you know, obviously, if you're not playing, you want to know why. You want to, you know, feel you still want to feel part of the team, and let the coach know that you care. You know, basically, so you need to go to the office. And, you know, his door is always open to say, you know, this and that, speak your mind, and, you know, obviously he would have a tough conversation, you know, but he was very, like I said, he was a very good player coach, and, you know, he got to the players, and, you know, that last part of the season, you know, we had to, you know, string some, a lot of wins together, and we did that. You know, he got the team playing well, and I think just by his coaching style and his ability to get everything out of his players was great to see, but some managers are like that. You know, they get the job done. They do training, and that's it. You know, you don't really know why you're not playing. You don't know why you're on the pitch. You don't know why you're in the stand. And it's tough for players not to know, you know, what the fans are thinking.
Yeah, is it tough because then you're thinking about it a lot? You're burning a lot of energy on something. Is it frustrating? What are the things that make it difficult when you don't have an open line of communication with the manager?
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. You know, I mean, I can go firsthand with that. And when I was in Germany, when I wasn't playing at all, and you know, the manager was pretty, you know, he didn't speak to me at all. I don't think he spoke to me until maybe I think March, when almost the end of the season. And then he told me, you know, oh, well, this is why. You know, but from August till March, I didn't hear a peep from him. You know, I didn't hear anything from him. You know, and I obviously couldn't speak the language, and he wasn't really that great in English. So, you know, I you know, the language barrier didn't help. But at the same time, he never, you know, took different players to the side and said, okay, this is why, you know. So, I mean, like I said, the coaches are different. You know, you get, you know, all walks of life, you know, throughout your career. But no, Stuart Pearce was one of the guys for me, 100%.
Yeah, so your career, I mean, it's every time I look at it and I interview you, you know, I always look at your career, and it's just, it's spectacular, from representing the United States to everything when it comes to different leagues and styles. This is from a young man who grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Was that one of your darkest periods? Because, look, there's ups and downs in professional sports, in life in general. Was that one of your toughest time periods in Germany?
Hello?
Yeah, was that one of your toughest time periods, DeMarcus, in Germany?
That was a tough time.
That was.
I've never had an experience like that, you know, obviously. Before, you know, I got to Germany, you know. Scotland was tough, you know, but that was more so injury-based, you know. And obviously, you know, playing at Rangers, you win every game, so it was hard to get back into the team. You know, I mean, it was difficult. But, I mean, most of the time I was injured. You know, I was injured the first almost 7 months of my career there. After that, different hamstring injuries, blah, blah, blah. But in Germany, I was fit. I just didn't play.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was frustrating, you know. I mean, I never got as down as to say I was, you know, wanting to, like, retire from college. I was never thought that. You know, I just felt like I needed another chance, somewhere to go that would give me a chance to play, you know, my football that, you know, I had confidence in myself. And, obviously, you know, that took me to Mexico. But I had a lot of soul searching to do after Germany. You know, it wasn't just the coach not picking me. You know, it was more so I looked at myself, my game, what do I need to improve? Not just him telling me, you know, I'm a man. I mean, what do I need to improve to get better? What do I need to do to make myself better? And, you know, that's what I try to do in that offseason. I mean, going to Mexico, you know, I try to do that. And, you know, obviously it got me back on the national team. It got me back, you know, to, you know, playing at a high level where I wanted to be. So I don't blame, you know, anything on the coach or Germany at all. I mean, it was a bad experience, yes, but, you know, I blame myself, you know, that I didn't do enough to get myself on the field.
Yeah, as bad an experience as it was, wasn't there – it obviously platformed you into a different way of looking at yourself, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, of course. I mean, people always say, you know, that they're the worst critic, but is that really true? You know, but for me, it really is. You know, I could have easily said, the man doesn't want to play me. He doesn't like me. He, you know, I can have any excuse in the whole world. But I looked at myself in the mirror and said, okay, I'm not doing something right. So I need to obviously, you know, make a change or, you know, keep pushing. And, you know, and the games that I felt that I played, I felt I did okay. You know, I never started, but I came in a couple of games and I felt I did all right to at least earn. But it just didn't happen. And, you know, that's the way it is. But I took it to myself after that season to say, okay, you know, what do I need to do to get myself back on the field? What do I need to do to get myself ready, you know, to compete at a high level again? You know, so I took a slap in the face. I looked at myself in the mirror. And I stood up like a man and tried to do what I could to get back to where I know how to play.
So what was it? Was it the mental side of the game? Was it the technical side, the tactical side? What did you ultimately find out that you needed to change to catapult your career forward again?
I mean, I think it was a little bit of everything, you know, because, I mean, obviously when you're not playing, you know, the mental side, the mental toughness kind of, you know, it takes the back door, you know, to your game. You know, I think the whole part of it, you know, I mean, when you don't have confidence, when you're not playing well, when you're not playing at all, you know, that all takes a toll, you know, on your body, on your mind, you know, the way you train, this and that. So, you know, I had to just, you know, take a step back and get that stuff out of my system and just, you know, just get back to thinking about the times when I was playing in Holland and Scotland and England, wherever, and to, you know, go back to that DeMarcus, you know, be that person. And, you know, that's what I tried to do. And obviously, you know, I got a new life in Mexico, and I knew from the start, I knew what I wanted to do, and I wasn't going to let anyone take this chance away from me. Because I knew that if it didn't work in Mexico, then I would get that tag as, oh, well, you know, it didn't work in Germany, it's not working in Mexico, now where'd you go? You know, so I didn't want to have that tag. So I made it a case and made it a point for myself that when my next move is going to be an important one, but it's going to be a move where I'm going to succeed and I'm going to do everything in my power to get back to where I know how to play.
Well, DeMarcus, as always, thank you very much. And by the way, after DeMarcus was at Hanover, he went to Puebla in Mexico and had some outstanding years down there playing in Liga MX. And we're fortunate to have him here in Houston. And It's going to be an exciting night for you on Thursday when you play against your former club, Manchester City. As always, DeMarcus, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. That's DeMarcus Beasley of the Houston Dynamo. And what a career he had. PSV Eindhoven, goes to Man City on loan, Rangers, Hanover 96 in Germany, down to Puebla, and now here in Houston as a designated player. Four World Cups for the United States. Just an amazing career for a young man who was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That'll wrap it up here tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Quick reminder, Twitter, it's Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets to the Manchester City game against the Houston Dynamo this Thursday night, the Dynamo Charities Cup. For Michael Carroll, our producer, I say goodnight to everyone.
ESPN 97.5.